Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why? Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio.
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, October 20th, and we're here today with Dr. Michael Rice to talk about the ancient Aramaic topic of forgiveness. Michael Rice, are you there, and are you unmuted?
I be here, and I be unmuted. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well.
Awesome.
I noticed nobody else popped up on the switchboard, so I thought I'd light up at least one phone line.
Well, thank you for jumping in. Thank you for jumping in. I thought Jeannie was going to be on today, but I know she's running to get the last-minute things done so that she can be flying tomorrow. We'll get to see her sweet face tomorrow night. So, all things moving forward. Intensive is moving at a significant depth. We just finished making an awesome raw chocolate raspberry kiwi pie for dessert tonight. And if anybody wants to see the plate of food that came out of today's lunch, I'm going to post it on Facebook. It was the meal was just awesome. Just thank you, God. So the food is just being beyond fabulous, and you know that fresh and raw food really boosts the energy, so that people can move into deeper and deeper layers of this vitality that comes from living as a human being, from living, you know, instead of as an accumulation of past traumas, dynamics, delights, pains, frustrations, joys. Instead of living from any of that, that of course is all past, the mind replicating itself, the specialty of the non-human mind is to just replicate those things, to really create a space to live in that state of being that is beyond comprehension to what we'll call the non-being mind. And that the tool of forgiveness is the tool of collapsing that which comes from non-being and keeps us trapped in the cycles of the non-being world. One of the things we talked about this morning was back about 38 or so years ago, I had what, for want of a better term, I call an opening experience where there was that full-blown presence of such ecstasy and such love and such a sweetness that it's incalculable. And I was remembering how if I asked a question, I was given an answer. And it was a full-blown visual answer as well as a silent auditory answer. I had things explained to me, although not in a voice I could hear in my ears. And when I asked about the world of the ego, I was shown this playful little puppy with something in its mouth, just kind of jumping and dancing around, trying to get my attention. And I can remember the sense of being in this absolutely blissful state and looking at the visual of this little puppy dancing around with whatever it was offering and saying to myself, are you kidding me? I'm going to give up this for that? Are you crazy? And I was kind of ruminating during the class about how it probably took me about a year before I got back to where anything that the day before that event that was meaningful to me, upsetting, disturbing, it took about a year before any of that held any meaning again for me, before I kind of got trapped and fell back into those replicate perceptions based in hostility and fear. And at one point in the experience, I can remember exclaiming how exciting this was, and I knew there was a reason to do the work. I knew there was something else. And boy, what a great place to live. And the answer came back, well, Michael, you have a choice. You could stay here. And then it was explained that if I stayed there and my structure wasn't wired or in a state where it could handle the energy flow, then it could lead to self-destruction, at which point I said, okay, I'll go back and do my work. And to this day, I continue to do my work to clean up that multi-generational database that produces all these replicate behaviors, all these why is this happening to me again behaviors that have nothing to do with the truth and the actuality of what's happening, only have to do with the lies that have been integrated into my carbon-based memory system, into my mind. And to keep remembering that when I'm experiencing something like that, that it's about me, that it's mine, you know, when my fist clenches, that clenched fist, it's about me. It's not about anybody else, not about what my mind is showing me. It's not about the lie that I'm being told that it's about them. It's about the content of my mind. It's about what I'm experiencing internally. And when I recognize that, I have the opportunity to shift the game. I have the opportunity to forgive, to remove those dynamics, to literally remove the experience of hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, and come back to the presence of love. So it's pretty awesome to have that experience and to have structured my life in a way where I get to keep saying it often enough that I get to hear it. My own non-being mind gets to hear it. I don't know how many other people even hold on to it, because the little playful puppy with all the fears and all the promises and all the money and all the fame and all the things that can distract us, people that don't have the tools to weaken and get rid of those things, how they keep it moving, keep it going. It's just, so if you want to learn it, teach it. Definitely one of the keys to the process. So that's kind of what's on my mind today. How about you, Tim?
Well, we had our support group last night, and we had two very well-focused and loving people in the group, and one of the topics that came up was all of the how the unconscious hides from us abusive stuff. And so we did a little processing and took a look at how my mind can give me all kinds of rationalized excuses for hiding the intensity of abuse, the level of abuse, how abusive a situation is for me, and how I can then be motivated to stay in a very unhealthy, unproductive environment. And literally minimize how abusive it is. And it happens in the context of our patriarchal culture and all of the institutionalized abuse, sexual abuse, sexualization, objectification of people. And so it was a very stimulating discussion at the tail end of, we watched the second hour of the Aramaicisms. And of course, the Aramaicisms, the second hour, I believe it's from 2015 when you and Dale were together, in itself provides a tremendous amount of stimulating conversation. So I was just buzzing by the time I left here last night. And again, I have the deep gratitude for people who are participating in these groups and come and share. And I got a lovely note from somebody who was in our Tuesday group and hasn't been there for a while, and just, you know, this fabulous note about the progress she's making in her life and how the tools are helping her structure something completely different, just, you know, mind-bogglingly different than what her life was like before she encountered the tools. And so, you know, one of the things I picked out of the lecture last night was the idea that we're told to fear God, and people in religions use fear as this tool for controlling and manipulating people. And Dale was talking about how that word is tetkal or tetkul, and what it really means is this wide open state of being completely aware of everything, wide open, wide awake. And it has nothing to do with fear. It has to do with, you know, he gives the example of, if you're walking alone in a dark alley and all of a sudden you hear a noise, everything becomes crystal clear. You're wide open, wide awake. You're scanning the environment. You're completely aware of your surroundings. And that's what's meant by that word, not to be fearful, to cower, to put another above you. It's simply meant to be in the present moment, wide open, wide awake. And then that led the two of you to talk about the word tuv, and how tuv, the first part of the word tuvehun, tuv means ripe, and it means being awake and aware in this moment. When's the only time that you can judge a piece of fruit as being ripe? In this moment. It's either ripe right now or it's not. And you can't predict, well, it will be ripe 3 days from now at 10 o'clock in the morning. You would have to be there 3 days from now to be judging, is it ripe? So this is the core of some of these teachings, is just about finding and removing everything that pulls me out of present moment awareness of my true nature and my surroundings. Because present moment awareness of my true nature and my surroundings is the only thing that's, capital T, true, that's actually going on. And everything that's other than that, in this work we would say less than that, is my work to remove, to clarify, to get rid of the bushel basket, so that the light that is in this present moment, breathing me, keeping my heart beating and looking through my eyes, that it can shine unobstructed in the world, in this energetic experience. So I'll take a breath and see what you want to say with that.
Just right on. You know, it's just where it's all at. And what we're here to be sharing with people. So it's, you know, it amazes me how often a fresh new experience of that brings a fresh new live experience, instead of, you know, as we read. And, you know, Tim, that quote I read the other day, I have not been able to find the source of it on Facebook, so I'll have to just send you what I have of it from William Blake, but where he talks about people living, doing the same dull round, or where Emerson talks about people living lives of desperation and making themselves happy with the killing of muskrats and mink. You know, like that's their sensation and their thrill for the day when there's human life available to us. So it's certainly an honor and a privilege to be in a space where I get to keep reminding myself, I get to keep remembering when the non-being mind can come in and have us forgetting so quickly. And of course, the beauty of teaching it is the way to really learn it. So what do you say we check and see how the chat room is doing, or if there's anybody with a hand up in the phone queue? Anybody got a thought or a question for us, anything to share? We'd be delighted to hear from you.
Well, we're looking at only one person. Lightness of Being is in the chat room. And we're looking at a whole host of people on the phone queue, but no one with a hand up. So 563-999-3581. Press 1, and you'll be the first in line. It's a full 40 minutes or so of talk time available to us to answer questions, to hear testimonials, to hear answers, perspectives. I was listening once again to an older show and heard myself talk about, I think it was Susan Bingham who called in and said, so is it okay if I just ask to be shown but I don't cancel the goal? And I said, well, no, that probably really won't do very much. And she said, well, what if I can't find it? What if I can't find the root of my pain or fear? And I said, well, you know, when you talk about it in that way, that specific, it puts me in mind of trying to find the acorn that spawned this 300-year-old oak tree. And that really isn't going to happen, because the acorn that spawned the 300-year-old oak tree doesn't even exist in the same form that it was before the oak tree became. And yet, everything about the 300-year-old oak tree and all of the branches and acorns that it has spawned over the past 300 years is available for enjoyment, participation, examination. So the point I was trying to make in that talk was simply, rather than get caught in the trap of, I have to figure this out, I have to find the root of this particular sadness or fear or pain, that I want to just step into making my home in the breath and applying a tool. The tools are being made available for free at www.whyagain.org. And we willingly coach people how to apply them 5 days a week on this show. So, questions, comments, well, answers, press 1.
Yes, and you might take a look, Tim. I know you've done some of Dr. Sonro's work, and I just touched in recently to the fact that he has had a movie made about him. Unfortunately, at the age of 93, I just learned yesterday that I believe it was last June that he passed away. But they have made a movie based on his work, and it's called All the Rage. And it's showing here in Lansing on next Friday night. No, pardon me. I believe it's next Thursday night, the 26th, at 7 o'clock here in Lansing. It was in the Lansing area. Catch the movie, All the Rage. And you know, Dr. Sano has created such a body of work that is so verifying to what we've been teaching for decades that I wish I'd got to corroborate with him, you know, while he was still alive. But as a back surgeon, MD back surgeon, he dropped the scalpel, stopped using it. And what he does is he teaches people that back pain is their rage. And so the movie's called All the Rage. And they interview several people have been crawling around the pain, well-known people like Howard Stern, and I forget who some of the other big stars are that have worked with Sarno. And they're affirming that when they start to work with understanding that it was their mental and emotional state, their back pain went away. And he's talking about people who, on x-rays, there's the bulging disc, there's the cracked vertebrae, there's the misaligned this and the damage that and the hurt this and the blood this and the blah, 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 blah. And he says, I work with all kinds of people with all that kind of stuff going on, and they don't have any pain. And so they go into rage. And then their rage, the mind is so smart that it says, oh, I've had a back injury. My pain is about my back injury. So anybody who's had any challenges with pain, and of course it's not just the back, but in particular he talks about the back being rage, and offers people resolution without the scalpel.
Well, there's more.
I've only seen. Go ahead.
There's more synchronicity for you, because in that very show where Susan Bingham called in, and I was prompted to talk about 300-year-old oak tree. She then made a comment that, she heard someplace, I'm probably going to think this is silly, that back pain is caused by anger. And I said, well, I don't think it's silly. I think you probably heard it on this show. And we launched into talking about that very thing just, probably October 2nd, I think, was the show that happened.
And well, Candace Pert.
Go ahead.
Candace Pert, who was the head of brain bio research at the National Mental Institute of Health, and who discovered the opiate receptors in the brain, pretty high-level scientist and actually a very sweet lady. It was a big loss when she checked out of her body at a relatively young age, which kind of shocked me. But what she says is that, and she takes it to emotions. Once again, I've had a few conversations with her, and I actually talked with her about this, but so briefly that it really didn't get a chance to really sink in. But she wrote a book called Molecules of Emotion, and she's laying it on emotions and not realizing, although her work documents it, not realizing that it's actually the thoughts that become the neuropeptides, and that when the neuropeptide strikes a cell, it creates this feeling sensation that warns us about the quality of the neuropeptide we're putting into it. But she says that our emotions are the molecular sheet music that orchestrates the whole function of the structure. And it's interesting how people are always looking for the physical cause of what's going on in them. I must have eaten something bad. I must have slipped on a banana peel. I must have, jarred this. I must have eaten a poison. I've been walking around with rage for 3 days. What do you suppose that's going to do when you realize that rage is based in thought, and thoughts reflect as rage, and thoughts are neuropeptides that actually find receptor sites on cells and enter the cells as chemistry and show up as the so-called chemistry in the cell. And that when we start cleaning that world up, we're going to see real, honest-to-God health care take place as opposed to disease care and shutting down awarenesses. The opening of awarenesses is what disease is here to teach us. It's here to teach us to, one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines is that the purpose of pain is to make our ears grow. It's to get us to the point where we recognize what it is that we're doing to ourselves, and we change that game. And it is forgiveness that allows us to drop to the level of the neuropeptide, extract the neuropeptide and therefore the aberrant chemistry from the cell, decode the content of the neuropeptide, touch into the quality of those thoughts, and remove them and shift them into thoughts based in and coming from that state of love, the state of being. And that's when real healing occurs. So that's what we're here to to support people understanding. And, you know, it's really time for so-called scientists in the medical world to catch up with science. Excuse me, gentlemen, ladies, let's listen to Einstein. On such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations in the soul lowers to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. But you can't expect somebody who's never dealt with their own emotional turmoil, traumas, their own mental offenses, hates, fears, angers, rages, guilts, and griefs, to be able to do much with that. And so the quest goes on for physical health of a physical body that does not even exist the way that we see it and the way we think that it exists. You know, a man standing looking at an airplane propeller spinning on a plane sees a shiny silver disc. He sees something that isn't there. When we look at a body, if we could see what was actually there, we see this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. We would not see a body. And we would learn how to change the cause level of what's going on in that structure rather than be stuck in the belief in physical form that we know scientifically. Ladies and gentlemen in the medical community, there's no such thing as a body. It doesn't exist. Stop the foolishness.
We have a caller.
Great. Let's go for it.
Area code 610, you're in the air.
Hi, Dr. Tim and Dr. Michael. Susan,
hey,
again.
Welcome, young lady.
Hi. You had, Michael, you had suggested that we continue a discussion, and we were coming to the end of the hour yesterday, and you were asking about my husband. And I've been working with him, but I've been working in a little bit different way, only because you are right out there. You're so far. You can just declare, there is no such thing as a body. That wouldn't go over too well. I have to get some intermediary stuff here.
Say it again.
So,
Say that last sentence again.
I need some intermediary tools. Something to say. I have a cousin and a dear friend who have terrible back troubles, for instance. And they've been through operations, and one had such a badly botched operation that she was crippled from that, and she has been bedridden since she was, she's 73, and she's been bedridden since she was about 25.
Yeah. Well,
now, I can't say to her, you don't have a body. Anyway, I would love to hear what you say about how to approach people who, it's like discounting her years of suffering if I just say, you know, it isn't there, or it's because of your thoughts, or, so anyway. Comments, please.
Well, here's how I'd approach someone in that posture. Because you're right, it's going to be tough to open that space. But I'd probably take a pen and a piece of paper with me, and I'd sit down and I'd draw an airplane propeller.
Yeah.
And I'd explain that we've started the spinning of the airplane propeller.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to bring a man from the jungles of South America who knows nothing about airplane propellers or airplanes. And we're going to have him stand on the tarmac and look at the airplane propeller.
Mm-hmm.
And ask what he's going to see. Is he going to see a pivot point with four arms spinning around it? And clearly, he's not going to see that. He's going to see a shiny silver disc.
Right.
So, you know, that becomes a parable so that people can begin to suspect the truth. So to present something like that simple, a parable, to say, now, notice this man believes the shiny silver disc is real because he sees it, he experiences it. And then imagine what would happen if he wanted to do a behavior based on the shiny silver disc. He wants to feel what the friction feels like on his fingertips.
Right.
It's easy to see that stuck in the picture in his mind, he could get himself into a whole lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we transfer that and you start to move into a different arena and you realize that energy is motion, can you at least suspect that maybe the body is the same thing, that if you were to be able to see what was actually there, you'd see these this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. And the same way that the brain makes up its best guess, a body or an airplane propeller, then we have the experience of a body. And there's actually a really good video that Dr. Tim came up with a little while back with a man named, Aileen, A-I-L-E-E-N, Seth.
I think it's A-N-I-L.
A-N-I-L? Okay.
I believe so. Seth, S-E-T-H.
Yeah. So Google Aileen, Seth, and Ted. And again, Tim, it's spelled A-N-I-L?
I believe so.
Yeah, I'm writing it down.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And have them watch it. And he's going to explain,
okay,
as a, I think he's a physicist, he's going to explain that our mind's just playing this game of making up its best guess. And a lot of its guesses are the pits.
Yeah.
And when we change our minds, we change our physiology.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a starting point.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. You said yesterday that anxiety is a thought disorder. That is,
yes,
revolutionary, because we've thought of it as a chemical inherited condition that's probably not going to get better in my husband's case. As I was telling you, his doctor said, you're going to have to just accept that you're going to live with this for the rest of your life. My husband comes home with his face on the ground, and I say, no, that's a bad doctor. That's not a true doctor. That's the most unhealing thing I can imagine. It's just, it's not going to be like that. But he's still, and this is another question I have, he's still on heavy, multiple psycho drugs.
Yep.
Is it possible to know if you're healed? Is it, of course you can use the tools. I'm just wondering,
well,
it's like a handicap.
Okay.
Yeah.
I face the frustration of that every day, the opportunity to work through that every day in working with people who come into my classes totally green, have never heard anything. By the way, Tim, I did just Google it, and it's actually A-N-I-L.
That's what he said,
according to a couple of sites.
Yeah,
but just that, no E-E-N on the end of it, just A-N-I-L. And maybe that's what I wasn't hearing. So anyway, if you're going to change the mind, you've got to start to teach the mind something other than what it knows. And there's actually a good line in the Course in Miracles is, how could I possibly start to comprehend something that's so different from what I've trained myself to believe? Well, you start where you start, and every individual starts in a different place. That drawing is a simple place to start. And then you can do a brief meditation with your husband. You can sit down and say, get into a quiet space and take a breath and just get all soft and quiet. And, sweetheart, I want you for a minute to let yourself feel rage.
Mm-hmm.
And let him take a minute to go to rage. And then ask him to take a breath and soften and let go of the rage, and then go to fear.
Okay.
Give him a minute or two to do fear. Then invite him to soften and let go of the fear, and then go to sadness. Maybe run through 3 or 4 or 5 emotions. And then ask him to come back to the present moment and ask him what he did to feel rage, sadness, fear, anger, grief. Ask him what he did. And when he gets down to it, he's going to identify the fact that what he did is he had a thought. And his thought reflected in his physiology as rage. Mm-hmm. And when he had a thought related to sadness, his thought reflected in his physiology as sadness. And when he had a thought related to fear, his thought reflected in his physiology as fear.
Yeah.
So now, dear husband, what thoughts do you think that cause anxiety that show up in your physiology when those neuropeptides hit the cell, becomes anxiety? Now, it may take him some time and some work to start to identify that, because he's, number one, he's I've been hiding it from himself, so the denial of that is probably pretty deep. And two, he's got somebody with some pills that'll help back up the denial with a physical form of dissociation called a drug.
Yeah.
But if you can start to suspect and start to play with, I can totally change my feelings. Notice, dear husband, when you go to the feeling of rage, you're not feeling anxiety anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You changed your thought and you changed your feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you start to really pay attention, and you're going to have to bypass your denial and you're going to have to build some brain cells for, what thought do I think that causes my cells to exude and saturate themselves with anxiety?
Yeah.
And the thought might be something like, I'm never going to be safe. I'm never going to be loved.
Yeah.
I've never been good enough. There's something wrong with me. I'm broken. Why doesn't anybody love me? Who's ever going to care for me? Somebody told me when I was 4 that I was going to go to hell. And they described this horrible, fiery place with all these demons in it. And I don't care if he's 97. If he hasn't forgiven that, every thought, every sensation that went along with being told that lie is still in his physiology. And when he starts to develop the skill of changing those thoughts, then his anxiety is going to disappear, because anxiety is a thought disorder.
Yeah. Well,
and you know, you have to approach the mind with, you know, you have to get to start to suspect. You know, the Course says your mind will, the Course in Miracles says your mind will never be able to show you something you don't give it permission to show you. So if the only permission I give my mind is to show me, well, you know, this is some sort of a chemical disorder in my body and I have nothing to do with it, then my mind can never show me the truth of how I create that.
Yeah.
When I start to suspect, oh, maybe I'm involved in what's going on with this anxiety. Maybe there's something that I haven't uncovered in myself in 50 years and refused to look at. And when I go there and I process that thought and I change my mind about it, then anxiety will disappear.
So, Michael, let me step in.
Go for it, Tim. Please do.
One of the things that I say in my intro session, usually first or second session with people, trying to explain the very same thing Michael is describing here, is often people come in and they say, they'll hear what Michael just said or that what I said are so similar, and they'll say, well, I know that's not true, because I was sitting there just feeling fine, loving, wonderful the other evening, And all of a sudden, bam, I was hit with anger, or bam, I was hit with depression.
Right.
And so I that's when I say, okay, these days if we talk to neuroscientists, they tell us, and this is, I think, a very, very generous estimate, generous for how much I'm actually going to be able to be aware of, but they tell me that if I sit and concentrate and focus for the next period of time, whether it's an hour or a day, it doesn't really matter, I'm going to be able to be aware of 5 out of every 100 thoughts that go through my mind. Michael quotes the, in a period of 1/25th of a second, 10,000 units of electrical activity firing in the brain, I can be able to be aware of 9. Well, Huffington Post published an article that said, you know, our brains are processing 40 million bits of information per second, and or 11 million bits of information per second, and we can be aware of 40 of them. So that's an even less generous number. So this is why there are so many tools in different forms available through Michael and Jeannie's work and in other people, other tools or schools that actually know this dynamic, to help me identify and then uncover, clarify, own, and then remove the unconscious material. So I need to be willing to watch for the negative thoughts that come up and catch them and say, gee, I wonder what belief I must be holding to have this kind of negative thought continue to come to my awareness, and track it down and dismantle it.
Right.
And there are tools like the Mind Shifter targeted journaling tool, the three earliest memories of conflict. One of the most powerful ones is the codependence worksheet, where I identify everybody who's ever upset me, what they did to upset me, what my punishment thought is for them, and then what my advice is for them. Because the genius of the mind is that it will try to tell me exactly what I need to do to heal myself. But since I've hidden it from myself with the conclusion this is too intense, too painful, too scary, too grief-stricken for me to deal with, I will project it into my mind's image of somebody else, and I will tell them exactly what I need to do to heal that they better do. So every time I hear myself give advice to somebody else, especially because I try to be loving and I'm a psychologist, it might be good advice for them, and at the same time it's good advice for them, it's perfect bullseye advice for me.
Yeah.
So there are different ways to help me uncover what I've hidden from myself and what are the dynamics I'm using to create my anxiety and my fear and my sadness and my pain. And we're just encouraging people to use all of the above tools.
Good.
And you may want to just watch for the schedule when we schedule the next intensive and grab them by the hand and bring them along with you. And come into an environment where the information is presented in such a way, both energetically and cognitively, that you can't help but get it.
Good.
So that's my best shot. And, of course, the four-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again, or the two-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again video, pardon me, is all about building the brain cells for that. You know, we can't see something that we don't have the brain cells for. And so it takes time to build the brain cells.
Right. Thanks.
Delighted. Honored. Just doing our jobs.
It's great.
And you know, sometimes for some people, it's more than they're willing to deal with. You know, Yeshua had said of his disciples that asked him, "What is it we need to do to live like you live?" And he told them essentially what we're saying. And half of his dedicated audience, his disciples at that time,
left away,
saying, that's too hard a saying. Too hard a saying. And some people just aren't ready to go for it. And if people hang around long enough and engage it often enough, all of a sudden there'll come a point where it'll click and it'll go, okay, now I've got it. And then people are off to the races.
Yeah. It did take me a long time to understand the giving up the goal business. I mean, I was so glad to hear you say, Michael, that it took you a long time to get it all. And you
30
had
plus
that
years.
Whoa. Well, and Tim, you said
but
the
other
day
something. But I didn't have anybody
to
explain it to me. I didn't have anybody who knew what it meant. We just found it in the Aramaic and started to work with it. But there wasn't anybody who could say, now here's why and how it works. I can do that in 2 minutes now. But I didn't have anybody that knew that. I didn't know that goals drove perception. I didn't know that perception was just a tiny framework of what's going on within the mind, which is just a tiny framework of what's going on within the world. I didn't know that if I canceled the goal, perception would collapse. I didn't know that if perception collapsed, it collapsed in itself and gave me access to the underlying trauma, which if I brought love to the presence of it, would heal it. I didn't know that. It took me 30 years to learn it. I didn't know anybody. I don't know of anybody that knows that.
So
it hasn't been with this work.
Would you say that the experience you had then was a catalyst, or it opened you up so that you could actually delve into those Aramaic texts and do the work? Because most of us are just going to not do that. It takes an amazing focus and creativity to do that, to get those messages. It's like what Byron Katie did. She woke up with a cockroach on her ankle and she realized she was a whole new person and her whole brain memory was wiped out. I guess she remembered how to speak English, but she didn't know she had a husband. She didn't recognize him when he showed up. You know who she is, right?
Who is that again?
Byron Katie. Byron Katie.
I have heard of her. I don't know her or of her directly.
Yeah. Well, her story is a little like yours. She was very, very down. She was at the bottom of the pit, in the worst depression and self-destructive. And she had two daughters and a husband, and she was in a halfway house because they couldn't handle her. And she woke up one morning sleeping on the floor because she didn't feel she was worthy to sleep in a bed. And a cockroach was crawling over her leg. And she woke up, just the way you woke up. She woke up. And she was in absolute total joy and bliss and then figured out how to help people get there. She just got bumped there. But she went sort of backwards and figured out a worksheet. It's a worksheet not unlike yours, four steps. And she goes all over the world running these workshops, BYRONKATIE. And so she went through this experience and she was able to discover the work after the experience. And it sounds as if that happened to you too. You had this experience and then you found Aramaic, and that's just miraculous that you were able to find it and do that work, make a program so that the rest of us can get dragged through purgatory into heaven on your coattails.
Well, of course, everybody's going to have to do their own work there, but unfortunately, I never had any of that depressed, you know, down, lost. My motivator was what they called physical disease. That's what led me to research and understand the principles of healing, and it was out of the discovery of the Aramaic and then the working with the Aramaic that I started to understand what Yeshua had developed. So, and while you can shuffle things around in the mind, I've had some people who've shared with me the experience they've had with that worksheet that Katie developed, and I still watch them in their trauma and their drama, and the next step or the next level is, unless you start forgiving it, the replicant mind is going to tend to play it out and play it out and play it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so the forgiveness process is, in my understanding and comprehension, is the core key to it all.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say to Tim, Tim told me that he observed that third thing that I said, I introduced by saying this might sound silly or this might sound stupid, and he just showed me, sort of held up a mirror and said, do you realize you do that? And that was just the most amazing gift, because I'm not doing it anymore. Yay! It's like something lifted. It was just a tiny piece of work that turned out to be central and momentous. It was one of those times when you were away, Dr. Michael, you were dealing with Jeannie's mother's death and so on. So that's a teeny testimonial.
What a blessing this man is, eh?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, this is the time when I normally chime in and say, it's not the man that's the blessing, it's the insight of the tool and the application of the tool that's the blessing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you brought it.
And the man that delivered it.
Yep.
Yeah, the man that delivered it is like every other man.
Yep. Well, no, not quite. Not quite. There aren't too many men that can offer the insight and the process that you do, Dr. Jim, and I encourage you to accept acknowledgement of the support that you offer people, because it's monumental and far beyond virtually any other man.
Well, I think it's more accurate to say that it's what everybody has access to when they choose to apply the tools. And
as we
say here on a regular basis, we're not trying to be the expert here. We're trying to help people align their own energies and, with the use of the tools, remove energies that don't belong so they have immediate, direct, loving, gentle, present moment access to the very kinds of energies that are flowing through me and Dr. Michael Rice and Susan Bingham when she asks a critical question that opens a space for another answer to come through. Every person has that potential.
Mm-hmm.
And we're encouraging people to step into that potential through the very simple, not easy all the time, but simple application of the tools to remove the bushel baskets that keep you from shining your light through that open conduit that you're intended to be for the presence of love to express in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certainly in full agreement with you, Dr. Jim, that everybody on the planet has access to that. But there's that old saying that says, many are cold, but few are frozen. No, not frozen. Many are called, but few choose to do the work. And you're one of those who chose to do the work. And I support you accepting the acknowledgement and the appreciation that people have for you, for the fact that you did it and you bring it to people and you gift it to people. And that's pretty awesome. And you deserve that accolade and that acknowledgement. As anybody else who does it also does, but you do it. And while lots of other people have access to it, few are the ones who actually do it.
Okay, well, I acknowledge the accolade. I just think that the time spent in the accolades is time that distracts from the truth, which is that same energy is in all of us. And we are as equal can be in scale at our root, at our potential to be this gentle, loving, or connected to this gentle, loving teacher that's in each of us, that ancient Aramaics called Ruka Dukucha, that elemental force that we all have access to.
No question. Everybody's got access. Thank you for accessing it, Dr. Tim.
You're entirely welcome and deserving.
Dr. Tim, Dr. Michael is going to make sure you take that compliment.
I take the compliment.
I'm just inviting him to receive it.
I receive them. I take it left, right, and center. And I add the awareness that it's not me doing it. It's, you know, what brings forth something like, check out the five numbers on a combination lock, or see how you're trying to look for the acorn that birthed a 300-year-old oak tree. That's not from my rehearsed mind, or these aren't things I lay awake at night thinking, gee, what clever thing could I say on the internet show? These things surprise me as much as anybody.
Yeah.
And you know, October 14th, 2015, we had an extended conversation about this with Michelle, and she wanted to call me a role model, and it came out one of the best ever back then to just say, look, you're not seeing me, Tim Hayes, Dr. Tim Hayes, because the Tim Hayes, the Dr. Tim Hayes that you're talking about, is the image in your head of this guy who's 6'4", walks funny, has these groups, is a psychologist in Illinois. But what you're getting when you're willing to receive some input that comes flowing out of me or Dr. Michael Rice or anybody else who asks a question on the show is that presence of love expressing creatively in the moment in a way that no conscious logical mind could ever create, orchestrate, or even comprehend. And so that's the thing that's so amazing.
Yeah.
Now, will I accept that I'm you know, going to have some credit for clearing the space? Absolutely. But that's all I'm doing is clearing the space. And that very same process is available, that space clearing process and the tools for it is available through the tireless efforts of Michael and Jeannie. And we're inviting everyone.
And Dr. Tim.
Everyone to step into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago when he says, don't be concerned, the words will be put in your mouth. Absolutely, there is,
yeah.
You know, that real teacher, the inner tutor, the intuition is there for all of us.
So, right, and he also says, why do you call me good? Only, only the good is good. And that's the point I'm making here. You know, if I want to elevate somebody to a position above myself, I've done myself and them a huge injustice. It's like Michael says, you know, in one of his lectures from A Course in Miracles, perception's made as an attack on God. So I have this perception that Dr. Tim is so marvelous and, you know, Michael is so is a genius and, oh boy, I could never do what Michael did, et cetera. I just attacked and I tried to take this expansive, you know, infinite expansion of creation and fold it down into something that my 9-bit logical mind can label and chew on and store away. And that's an attack on the truth. The truth is, as, you know, we talk about over and over on this show, we're all connected. If that is flowing through me, it's flowing through everyone.
Yeah. I guess part of it is.
And thank yous are appropriate.
Say that again, Michael?
And they're welcomed and accepted, and we move right through that to what's even more useful.
Yeah.
Mucho gracias. Who has more fun than humans?
Maybe God's jealous.
Oh, I think that's a human attribute. I think that probably that wording is probably indicative of a worksheet on jealousy that might be useful.
Okay, okay, yeah.
Part of the speech.
If there isn't another hand,
my words
up,
fly
I
up, my thoughts remain below.
Yeah.
Next layer, next level, next piece of the puzzle.
Well, Susan, we have a minute and 49 seconds left.
Oh. Okay, I have a question then. Is there no one else with a hand up?
Well, 2 minutes is enough, so go ahead.
Okay. Just the plight of animals. I've been watching a little bird who feeds at a feeder near our kitchen window. He's sick. He's huffing and puffing, and there's mucus coming out of his beak, and he's having a hard time eating, and he's weak, and I imagine he's on his way out. That triggers a lot of sorrow and helplessness because I know he's wild. If I went to get him, he'd be frightened. He'd probably die of fear. What do you have to say about the suffering of animals and how we could... Do they suffer the way we do? They certainly don't have these layers of mental, you know, junk. Do they just accept? It looks as if he's just... accepting, he's in the present, he's accepting his situation. And it's quite simple and straightforward to him, and he's not afraid. But I'd love to hear what you have to say about something like that.
Of course, we're just down to a few seconds, so the simple, quick answer I'd give would be the space. That's our job, be the space. Can I comprehend what that animal's going through? No. With my intuition, I might get a sense of it, but can I help alleviate the suffering? Yes, by being the active space of love. If I have trauma and drama around it, then I just added through sympathy to their trauma and drama. If I take responsibility for my trauma and trauma, then I get to be free of it and I get to close the show because we're finished and we'll say, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome
okay.
gift.
You have more. Thank you.
Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.